This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawira Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Otapoti, Dunedin, and I am joined, not from Whakatane, from Christchurch, by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. What are you doing in Christchurch?
I'm attending the Adaptation Futures UN conference to talk about the impact of climate change on our coastal communities and run a workshop.
That sounds fun.
It will be fun. I can't wait. The only thing that's a little bit less fun than what I planned is that you're not here. But next time.
Next time. I need to get well before I go to Botswana. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, who are we introducing today?
Botswana. So hard to know.
Yeah, but
it's my great...
Henry's in Christchurch, so there's a benefit of going to Christchurch.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm trying to see him on the way through. Who are we introducing today?
It's my great pleasure to introduce the wonderful Alicia Jackson from our Masters of Sustainable Business Program. Welcome, Alicia. It is a joy to have you here.
Kia ora. Thank you for having me.
Kia ora, Alicia. Where did you grow up, Alicia?
Ooh, bit of a tough question. Kind of all over the place. I was born in Indonesia, lived there for a little bit, then spent some time in Beijing, back to Indonesia, then Kazakhstan, Dubai, then moved back to New Zealand, lived in Auckland for a little bit, then spent most of primary and intermediate school up in the far north in a small community called Dallas Bay, and then did high school in Jakarta, and then moved back for university, came down to Dunedin, and I've been here mostly since then.
My usual question for people at this stage is to say, what was it like growing up there? What was it like growing up on Earth?
Yes, it was an interesting upbringing, and it's very different from a lot of my friends and all this, but I loved it. I think it taught me a lot. I think it made me very adaptable, and I can fit into a lot of situations. I would say it's made me more curious about the world and different cultures and different people. But I also like spending a bit more time in one area now that I've kind of grown up a little bit.
One of the things that I write about is the sense of place and the connection of the sense of place to sustainability and community well-being and various other things. Do you have multiple senses of place, or how's it worked for you?
I would say so. I have always felt very, I would say, connected to New Zealand, because I think I've spent more of my formative years in the far north, and I've lived in Dunedin now for long enough for it to feel like home. But also there's little parts of me that are like, Oh, but I love that place. And I would say even the places that I want to live, like I'm moving to London next year, and I would say that I feel like already connected to that place, even though I'm not living there yet. And I think that's because I've just visited quite a few times and I've got lots of family and friends there. But I would say, yeah, like different places kind of speak out to me and stay with me for a long time.
On Richard Osman's House of Games, they've got a section in the show called Where is Kazakhstan? Because nobody knows where it is, but presumably you know where it is. How long
yes.
are you there for?
I mean, it's been a long time since I've been there. But
you could probably yeah. find you could probably find it on a map.
Yes.
So you're now doing a Master's of Sustainable Business. What did you do for your undergrad?
I did a double major in management and international business, and I did my minor in Spanish. So
that is not a place where you've lived.
Apparently. No. Well, actually, now I've lived in Spain. I did my exchange in Barcelona. But yeah, it was at the time I hadn't lived there.
So what led you down a sustainability route?
I would say probably my upbringing in the far north. We spent a lot of time outside camping, fishing, hiking. I think my dad really pushed that for us. And our school was very, very small. We had about 60 people from years 1 to 8. And it was very connected to our like local environment. And we did lots of camping and kind of getting out into nature with the school as well. So I think that's kind of pushed me in that direction. And then probably the more I learn about it, and the more I see stuff about it in the news, I get more and more interested in doing it. And then last year I kind of got the push after my undergrad and decided, yeah, that's what I want to go into. And I really want to focus on that area and hopefully do my bit in that area.
Let's take the first of your music choices. Let's have Taylor Swift. Marjorie, why this one?
I've always been a big Taylor Swift fan. Marjorie it's a song that makes me like happy and sad at the same time, because it's about her grandmother. And her grandmother was an opera singer or a performer of some kind. And it's kind of like all about her and then her relationship with her grandmother and then losing her grandmother. And actually you've got some of her grandmother in the song. And so there's this lovely bit that you can just hear the like high notes of her grandma in the song. And it is so special. And I went to the Eras Tour concert last year and bawled my eyes out during the song when it played. I was like, yep, this was, I kind of went in knowing that I would probably do that, but it's kind of stuck with me ever since. And I think it's such a special song.
Never be so kind, you forget to be clever. Never be so clever, you forget to be kind. And if I didn't know better, I'd think you were talking to me now. If I didn't know better, I'd think you were still around. What died didn't stay dead. You're alive in my head. What died
didn't stay dead. What died didn't stay dead. You're alive, so alive. Never be so polite, you forget your power. Never wield such power, you forget to be polite. Listening to me now. If I didn't know better, I'd think you were still around. What died didn't stay dead. What died didn't stay dead. You're alive, you're alive in my head. What died didn't stay dead. What died didn't stay dead. Chill that wakes me up. You love the amber sky so much. Long limbs and frozen swims. You'd always go past where our feet could touch. And I complained the whole way there. The car ride back and up the stairs. I should have asked you questions. I should have asked you how to be. Asked you to write it down for me. Should have kept every grocery store receipt. Cause every scrap of you would be taken from me. Watched as you signed your name Marjorie. All your closets of backlog dreams. And how you left them all to me. What died didn't stay dead. What died didn't stay dead. You're alive in my head. What died didn't stay dead. What died didn't stay dead. You're alive, so alive. If I didn't know better, I'd think you were singing to me now. If I didn't know better, I'd think you were still around. I know better, but I still feel you all around. I know better, but you're still around.
Alicia, you have had this amazing life of growing up in this very international context, and so it gives you this incredibly broad perspective of the world. How could we encourage that in rangatahi who have not been able to, who haven't had this amazing opportunity to travel? How do we encourage that global perspective?
I think fostering curiosity and I think with access to social media and YouTube and everything like this, I think you can learn a lot about different cultures that way. And I think kind of fostering that is really important. Opening up conversations and even when I took Spanish, I'd never been to Spain, never been to Latin America, didn't know pretty much anything about it. But part of the classes was to learn about the culture, not just the language. And I almost found that more interesting. I loved learning about the food and the traditions. And Spain has these amazing festivals, and their Easter traditions are wild. Like they spend the entire week doing something, and there's different foods associated with different times of the year. And so I think just bringing that in, and even if you're teaching it from like a theoretical perspective, like the person hasn't had that experience themselves, I think you can find, you know, vlogs of people who have done that kind of thing, and it almost can feel like you're there if it's like done well. So yeah, I would say definitely just like fostering curiosity and pushing for that. I think that's probably the best thing for people, just to learn about other cultures and other people. It doesn't have to be like a deep dive or anything, but it could just be just like, oh, like what's a food that they cook, and maybe I can make that here. And it's quite like transferable now that we can get a lot of ingredients globally for different cultures. So yeah,
I absolutely agree with you. I've always wanted to have a TV show called I Wonder What They're Cooking, following someone around the supermarket, watching them put interesting ingredients in their trolley and then going home with them and cooking with them. It would be the coolest TV show.
It would be. Unfortunately, I'm not much of a cook, but I'm hoping to get there one day.
Speaking of cool people, will you tell us about who you interviewed and why?
Yes, so I interviewed Raya McLean. She's the owner of Vogel Street Kitchen, which is actually a cafe I work at now. I'm a duty manager there. I interviewed her because she's just this incredible woman who, I don't know how she does everything she does. Like, she has another business and homeware, and she's very active in her children's schooling and everything like that. But it's also just like the way she is. She's always been very open, very welcoming. She's a great boss. Love her. Very respectful. And I just, yeah, she's got a cool kind of sense of style. And the way she treats the staff at Vogel Street Kitchen is just, I really, really respect it. Especially because it's hospitality, and sometimes you really don't get that with owners and front of house staff. So I really appreciate that she's very connected with her business, and she actually enjoys it and knows what she's doing, and she loves it, and it definitely comes across that way. But she's really fostered this community, well, workplace community, where we're open to bringing new ideas to her, and she's very receptive of that. And we talk about some of the sustainability things that we do at the cafe, and a lot of that is actually employee-led. But in a lot of businesses, employees wouldn't actually feel comfortable bringing up those ideas. But Raya really, really encourages that and supports that. And so I think that's why it's been so successful in that kind of area. Yeah.
Awesome. Let's have a listen now.
Kia ora, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Alicia Unpacks, where I find current relevant news, look at what's been researched, and then go out into local Otaputi Dunedin to find out what it's like here in our community. Today we'll be talking about all things hospitality and sustainability, with a focus on corporate social responsibility. If you're like me, you probably haven't heard of the Michelin Guide's Green Star. It's a new award that goes to restaurants that source sustainably, are accountable for ethical standards, and minimize waste. The article I saw by Lisa Cam was specific to Hong Kong, where only 3 restaurants had received the Green Stars since it was initiated in 2020. The Hong Kong hospitality environment has significant differences compared to New Zealand, but the focus on sustainability in restaurants is growing. The movement has aimed to reduce food waste, plastic packaging, showcase different ingredients, and source locally, positively impacting the environment and the local community. Now that sounds great, but what does the literature say? The article I'll highlight by Shim et al. 2021 covers corporate social responsibility, or CSR, and the triple bottom line in restaurants. For a bit of background, the triple bottom line is a framework for a business model that focuses on profit, the planet, and people, rather than just only profit. The article was super interesting because their research found that triple bottom line is in fact essential to the sustainability of restaurant firms. Of course, different restaurants in different contexts were impacted differently by what kind of CSR activities they implemented, but the focus on environmental CSR has contributed to a growing conversation. This conversation surrounding sustainability in restaurants is super fascinating as it's one I'm linked to quite closely. But today it's especially great because I have a very special guest interview with local legend Raya, owner of Vogel Street Kitchen.
To start us off, what or where is your happy place?
Oh, in a business context? Is that what you mean?
In personal,
on a good day, it might be hanging out with my three daughters, one, two, or all three of them. But that seems to happen less and less the older they get. It might be going to the farmer's market and out for a nice coffee with a dear friend if I've got a day off. And it might be working in the cafe, which I do actually still love. I have days where I enjoy it and I really like our team. I like working with our team and with our customers. So, yeah, I think it's not always like that, but often it is.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. It's a vibrant and ever-changing atmosphere and there's normally something happening. I particularly like the vibes on Saturdays and Sundays. Yeah, it's challenging, but good, rewarding.
Yeah. No 2 days are the same in hospitality.
That's true.
How did you get to where you are today?
I always knew that I would open a cafe, probably before the days where there were so many cafes around, because New Zealand didn't really used to have much of a cafe culture when I was growing up in the 80s. It was hard to get, even the 90s, it was hard to get a really decent cup of coffee anywhere. I knew when I was about 16, I worked in various cafes. I worked as a barista for years and I thought, I'm going to do this one day. I went down the rabbit hole of almost opening a restaurant in a yacht club in Charteris Bay in Christchurch years ago. But the logistics of that were too hard with water and the tides and everything. Bit of a long story, but I kind of had a sense then, started when I was 16, I tried to do that when I was about 30, went off and sold real estate for 12 years, had some kids, moved to Dunedin after the earthquakes, and opened Vogel Street Kitchen when I was, we're going to be 11 years old soon, so I must have been about 42. So my youngest girls were still in nappies, so it was a lot. I looked a really long time for the right premises, and I didn't want something in the CBD. I wanted it either to be in the suburbs. Couldn't find the right place, and then stumbled upon Vogel Street and the warehouse precinct. And Laurie, our landlord, who owns a few buildings around there, and it was derelict and downtrodden. There was only one building on all of Vogel Street that had been renovated, and that was the one across the road. And I thought, oh, well, at least there was about 80 people that worked in that building, ADI Instruments. I thought, if nothing else, they might want a coffee, perhaps. Everybody told me not to do it and that it wouldn't work and that it was a terrible place to have a cafe, but I'm kind of a believer in going with your gut. So I was quite determined, sold my vision to Laurie, and he was an amazing person to be working with, and he invested a lot in getting the building to where it is today and supported me from day one with the vision that it was going to be a really big, busy, eclectic cafe. So we opened in December 2014. Yeah, December 2014. And we were really busy from the day that we opened the doors. In fact, we had queues out the door. Yeah.
And would you be able to, because today's podcast is all about sustainability within restaurants and hospitality, can you maybe speak more about that around Vogel Street Kitchen and how you've implemented that?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got some pretty solid I would call them values that I've taken into the business from day one and that I built into the business plan for the business. Because it's quite a big cafe when we opened. There was 33 employees because we did two nights a week as well. And we seat 120 people. So it's quite a big operation. But right from the get-go, we have been only sold free-range chicken, pork, eggs, bacon, and have never deviated from that. We are really hot on recycling and reusing wherever we can. So we've always had all the scraps that go through the business have gone to a pig farm in Tairi Mouth. So there's no actual food waste. It all gets used in some way. And the same goes for the plastics and recycling. Coffee grounds, our barista has always bagged those up and they get picked up by customers for their gardens. And we also have our barista and one of our chefs takes a great deal of time and care to recycle the Tetra Paks and all the soft plastics through the business. So we do have things going to landfill every week, but they're significantly less than what they would be if we didn't go through those processes. In terms of sustainability as well, I think that kind of flows through to employment practices. Like we try and maintain really good relationships with our employees, and I think this gives them more of a sense of ownership of the business as well, which is why when they see things that could be improved, or then they feel happy to speak up and happy to chip in and help, hence the soft plastics and the coffee grounds getting recycled, because that's something they want to do, they want to contribute, which is awesome. I also noticed recently that one of our chefs who recycles the soft plastics has been saving and keeping all of our plastic ice cream containers, and she's been taking them to the bowling club in Caversham for their meals. Yeah. A sore spot for me personally is takeaway coffee cups, and we do incentivise our customers not to use them, and we do incentivise our customers to bring their keep cups. But unfortunately, it's really hard to get away from customers just have an expectation that they can come in and grab a takeaway coffee, and there's not a great deal of thought into where that cup's going, because it is going to landfill. It's not going to be recycled in Dunedin. So I could have made a choice at some stage that we just don't have takeaway cups, but unfortunately that would be a massive cost to our business and we would lose a lot of our custom. So I wish there was more awareness around that, and I wish more people made an effort to carry and use and keep a keep cup. Mm.
Yeah, it is really hard with when people have the expectation of being able to have a takeaway cup, to then you're trying to promote having your own keep cups, but then it's still not mainstream quite as yet. But I feel like we're moving in that direction, which is quite nice. But it is, like, we do live in quite a convenience-centered world.
Yes.
So that makes it a little bit more difficult.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you be able to tell me about a moment in your life that led you to your views on sustainabilities, and how have your views changed since then?
Oh, I grew up in the 70s. So I would say I'm probably a little bit of a hippie at heart in my ethos around treatment of animals and the earth, really. That's always just been part of the way that I grew up and the school that I went to, and that showing respect for the world that we live in. I think there might be an exorbitant amount of things going to landfill in our city, in our country, and in the world, obviously. But I really struggle with the cheap throwaway culture that we live in, the cheap throwaway world. And I guess I've developed over the years a really strong love of things old and quality and beautifully made and quirky. And that kind of comes through in my overflowing and ridiculously large wardrobe is full of vintage clothing. And also I've opened a homeware store now, so there will be some vintage and mid-century furniture in there. And I really wish people would stop buying so much crap without thinking about it. It really makes me feel quite devastated to see videos online of all the textiles that are ending up in landfill, and, you know, it's just a never-ending problem that is just going to turn into a tidal wave of waste for the planet. But I probably knew that, you know, 40 years ago, so it's nothing new to me, but, I wish people would think about it a little bit more.
Because I know some of the furniture in Vogel Street Kitchen is, like, from old schools.
Yeah. Yes. So we had all the steel tables downstairs. They made from reclaimed mahogany, which our landlord gave to us because he likes to collect architectural bits and pieces and hoard them. So I got the engineering students at the Polytech to make the steel frames, and then a joiner fitted the mahogany tops. The large tables upstairs are from the dining hall at John McGlashan. So they're oak and they're from the 1940s. And most of the chairs in the cafe are old school chairs, which I like. I like things to have character and to tell a story, and I have a bit of an aversion for anything shining and new. It's not how I roll. And I also have, I don't think, you'd be hard pressed to find anything white in that cafe.
I think there's so, everything in Vogel Street has character and like adds to the atmosphere and the vibe of the cafe. I think it really builds on the experience that people have when they come in and eat.
And the building kind of dictated that. The building dictated how the fit out would be and what the furniture would be and what the feel of the place would be. As an old printer's warehouse from the 1800s. And I just kind of believe in being true to those things.
If you could give some advice to everyone, what is one simple thing that people can do to live more sustainably?
Stop buying cheap clothes off Temu or Shein, anything actually. Foster a love of the hunt in op shops or finding things on marketplace. If you need something for your house, the chances are that you can probably find it secondhand and it will be beautiful quality and half the price of some cheap piece of shit furniture from Kmart that's going to look terrible and tacky and dated in a year anyway. So I guess for me, that's always been a big part of my life, is enjoying having nice things, and 9 times out of 10 I've fossicked them or found them at auction or in an op shop or on Marketplace or on Trade Me, in terms of house things, furniture. Definitely furniture and clothes.
You can find some really unique pieces.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And, I mean, people come to my house and they don't... It's probably a bit eclectic and maybe slightly cluttered, but they come and they go, oh, my God, this is so amazing. Oh, wow, what's that? Oh, wow, where did you get that? And it's never, ever going to be new. It's always going to be vintage. And I just think, enjoy things, use them. And you can live a beautiful life without spending a whole lot of money and without consuming new things all the time. And I don't really subscribe to trends either. I don't believe in trends in homewares or really so much in fashion either, because it's all cyclical. It all goes around and comes around. Just find your style and have fun finding it. And, yeah, please stop buying clothes from Shein and Temu. I don't know.
Half the fun is to explore and find your personal style, your fashion, what you like, what you don't like.
Yes.
Especially with the trends, it's easy to get wrapped up in it, but really, like, do you actually like it? Or do you just like it because everyone else is wearing it or has it, kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah, that striving that need that we have to strive to keep up with the Joneses, I think that's more of a question you should be asking yourself, why you feel like that. And is there a better way to be spending your energy and your money, really? Mm.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Amazing. Have a great rest of your day.
Yes, I will. Yes.
Well, Alicia, that was a really powerful interview. What was your big takeaway from it?
I think my big takeaway from it was that Ryan and I are probably a lot more similar than I thought we were. I think we've got very similar views on fast fashion and unsustainable online shopping like Temu and Shein. I think they're kind of the bane of my existence. I really don't love them. But I think it is the little things that we can do as people just to make our little difference. I think those differences add up and they can make really big change and can change your outlook on how you go about things as well.
I've been thinking about there was about maybe 2 years ago I spoke at a conference, which is a degrowth conference in Wellington, and what I had everybody do was pick one thing that they would change in the way they live their lives and map the impact of that over the year. How do we kind of get that to be a normal thing where people go, right, okay, I'm going to do this one thing, and then maybe find other people to do that one thing with me, and we're going to map our impact. How do we get that to be an exciting thing? Do we have to start it with kids? Not everybody's going to go do a master's degree. How do we get that change to happen?
I think it's important for people to focus on something that they're really interested in, and I think it's going to be different for everyone else. Like, maybe one person really loves coffee and like loves to go to a coffee shop and get a takeaway coffee. I think their thing could be their reusable coffee cup. Like, find some coffee cup that is reusable that they really, really like, because there's so many different styles now. So there's not really an excuse of like the feel of the takeaway coffee cup, I don't feel. But I feel like everyone can have one thing that they're really, really interested in an area that they're really interested in, and they can go from there. It doesn't have to be like everyone does the same thing, because then no one's going to do it for the entire year, because it won't actually, it's not actually what they want to do. But yeah, just like picking one thing, like my thing this year has really been not buying any new clothing if I can really, really help it. Like, it's made me branch out into like dress rentals and asking friends, and like, I don't have that many special occasions to go to, but that would be a good choice for like girls that have a lot of 21st, like, and they'd like to wear a new different dress every 21st party, but not all of like, a lot of people don't have that money to spend on the new dresses anyway, so it's actually good for them and then also great for the environment as well. So I would say like finding an area that you think you could make an impact / what you're really, really interested in. That would be my kind of thought process on that.
How do we get people to move past the initial, you know, what you're talking about is foot in the door or nudge type thinking, that once you're doing one thing, then you hopefully will make it easier to do the next thing. But what happens if they don't? What happens if people essentially not greenwash in a sense of that they're marketing it, but greenwash in a sense of personal greenwash? I've got my reusable cup. That's me done.
I think it is really hard in some of those cases when we have lived lives where we're pushed to consume things all the time and do the thing that is most convenient, I think it's helped. One of the things that have helped is kind of like cafes giving some sort of incentive. Like Vogel Street, it's a whole dollar difference if you bring your own keep cup versus a takeaway coffee. And I think that does actually incentivize people to bring it in. Like it could be a mug. It doesn't have to be like anything fancy at all. But yeah, I think it part of it does sometimes have to come from businesses incentivizing sustainable change, and which is kind of a pity because it's not going to come from a lot of businesses. But I think holding each other accountable is really important as well. Talk to your friends, talk to your family, bring up ideas, kind of remind them that there are other options, that kind of thing, to start the habit, and then hopefully they can continue that if they're really interested in it and they actually find it the same.
Ria talked about the tidal wave of waste and the cheap throwaway culture, and you were saying just before that the way that we're pushed into consuming things all the time. Is the whole nature of business fundamentally broken? That we've got a business system founded on the basis of selling more stuff?
I think yes, to a degree, I would say so. I think in a lot of businesses, it is profit driven, which makes them want consumers to buy more and consume more. And I think that isn't sustainable with the planet's finite resources. It doesn't make sense. But I think businesses have real opportunity to make massive impact socially and environmentally if there wasn't so much almost like hoarding. I think they can use the money that they make, if they do make it, into good, and or they can kind of approach from a more sustainable mindset and kind of educate consumers that they don't have to buy everything on the website, and there's not a new shiny thing every day or a new shiny trend every week. But it is really hard when that's kind of where we're at in the world at the moment.
But the finance tech bros are not going to get to be billionaires with that attitude.
I've made my peace for not being a rich person in this world, but
it's all very well you having that. But meanwhile, there's other people thinking that they can emulate somebody that's made $1 billion by selling stuff.
Oh no, and it's and like it totally is achievable for people, and they do have those goals. But I think in some ways, you kind of have to look in the mirror and ask, but why do you want so much money? Because, like, I have traveled in university, like, after being separated from my parents and what they've done with their lives, I've been able to travel from university by working hard. I think if they want the money to have some nice house or to travel the world, I think there's opportunities to do that without devastating the world in some way.
Bubble Sprite of the wild coasts, secluded inlets and forest and beaches of Otago Peninsula. Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu McKenzie.
Kia ora koutou, ngā mihi aroha nui kia koutou katoa hou. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars, your beloved universes. I really hope, wherever you are, whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day. Who you are, a triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years has been very tough. And we've really had to try very hard to develop new strategies to look after ourselves. And of course, as a species, we've been doing this for a very long time. But we haven't had the united global consciousness in the same way that we have now. And of course, we stand at the forefront of many new ways of doing, being, seeing, feeling every day, as we help the infinite universe to evolve just by being us. So I had a wonderful day yesterday in my new role at the Otago Shore and Land Trust. I was prancing about with beautiful kiddies from Elm Grove School. And, you know, we talked all about the importance of being ourselves. And we had lots and lots of fun. And something that I really enjoyed about the day was having the opportunity just to use the things that I had in my car to teach the kiddies. And I do love this capacity that we have to adapt and move on the fly and see that one thing, even if it's an apple or a shoe, can in fact represent a sea lion or a sea star. And this ability that our consciousness has, I think, gives us a great freedom when things are tough. We know that even though things can appear one way, things have the capacity to change. So I really hope that for you, whatever's going on for you, your beautiful, beautiful mind and your beautiful, beautiful body are working together to give you all the support you need. I'm sure they are. And of course, I've become obsessed with the microbiome, which is a great joy to me. And I've been really enjoying making teas from all the medicinal plants around where I work and offering them to everyone, and everyone's been enjoying them. And I do enjoy being a scientist, even if it's unofficially, you know. And my dear friend at work hasn't been sleeping, so I made a medicinal tea with lavender and what have you in it. And he came in yesterday and he said, "Oh, I slept in this morning, you know, my alarm didn't go off." I said, "Oh, I must have put a bit too much lavender in it." And he said, "Oh, it worked." And he was very pleased about it. So that was really good. So I am enjoying my citizen science at the moment. And the other thing that's been happening, of course, which is really great, is because we are open to the whole world now in my new role. I've been meeting all these people from all over the world. And I've collected a new university, which is very exciting, which is Utica University. So that means that when we start having our international interns and what have you, that some of them will be from Utica. So I met this wonderful lady that can help me with my research as well. And she studies animal behaviour. And, of course, I am quite interested in human animal behaviour. But really the behaviour of all life and how it coexists. And she only has 13 students in her class, which I thought was really nice. And it reminded me, of course, of Dear Sam and Moira and, you know, the great work that you both do really to nurture people. And, of course, we have evolved to live in small groups, and we have evolved to hunt in small groups, and we have evolved to, you know, look after the community in small groups. So it was nice to hear that this is still going on and this is still possible. I really hope for you, whatever you're working through at the moment, there are people in your life who are there to help you and who see you and appreciate you as you are, see your capacity for change and transformation, reaching even greater heights of magnificence, brilliance and indeed perfection. And I'll look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
Some questions to end the show, and not very much time, so we're going to have to wriggle. What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
big personal success has been really focusing on my mental health. I went through a pretty low period in my first year of university, first and second, but I've really worked hard at kind of having a balance and, you know, getting off medication and doing things that I really enjoy doing, and also pushing myself to do the things that scare me and made me anxious in the first place. I think that's really, that's been something that I'm personally proud of myself for, because that's been a massive theme of this year, is to get out of my comfort zone and into those areas where I probably would have avoided them completely 2 or 3 years ago. So yeah, I would say that's my big achievement for myself at the moment in the past few years.
Well done you. What is your superpower?
I think almost probably being curious about other people's perspectives. I know that I've got a very probably random perspective on a lot of things because of my upbringing, and but I'm always curious about other people's, and I won't ever like hate on someone else's perspective just because of the way that they've grown up or their culture or what they were taught. I would say it feeds into a much more meaningful conversation, and it can drive much more meaningful change and have lasting change, because just because it works for me doesn't mean it's going to work for everyone else.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
Yes, I would say so. Probably more so towards friends and family, based off of what I try to do in my life. And I try to kind of educate people in areas that they might not know as much about. So I think I like to bring forward information, and then they can choose what to do with that. But I can try and give them good options with them.
So what challenge or opportunity are you looking forward to in the next year or so? You're moving to London, is that it?
Yeah. I would say that's my challenge that I'm looking forward to. I think if I think too much about it, I get a little bit nervous because it's a little bit of a step in the dark at the moment. Can't really apply for anything until I have my work visa, but I can't apply for that until close to the time. And so it's a little bit of a trust the process at the moment, but I'm excited to start that process. Yeah.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
I think my advice would be to push yourself to do better, whatever that means to you. I think it could be personally, it could be in your work, it could be in terms of sport or education or something like that. But I think we can, I think it's, you can do a lot if you push yourself to do better and be better in whatever way you want to be better.
That's great advice. Thank you. Mawira.
Alicia, thank you for your contribution to our class. Thank you for the positivity that you bring, your willingness to engage in conversation and debate, your insight, and just for being such a big thinker, and your big thinking comes out in your work and the way that you naturally lead others. It has been a joy to have you in class with us, and we wish you all the best for the journey ahead. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to go out to your second music choice, because we didn't have time to put it on during the show. Pink Floyd, Take It Back. You've been listening to Blowing Bubble Walls, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, who are brought to you by Otago Polytechnic and the University of Otago. We are broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. Alicia Jackson brought her episode of Coming Up for Air with Moira Karatai. I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.